Thank you, Joanna. Just to tie this in, and then I will certainly pass to Mark and Marie Carmen and to Pam as well. So, Council, when I was talking earlier about some of the strategic conversations that were happening at Council, at the trustees in KL, as we're talking through the changes, a number of trustees paused and said, okay, foundation leadership, where are we currently at with our stakeholder relationships? Are we engaging in the right way with those? Which is why you might hear some terminology moving between relationships and alliances. So they certainly put the challenge to us that as we're starting to think through different areas that we may do greater work in, who are we actually working with, or who could we be working with as well? So there was quite a number of open areas that the trustees put to us. Straight away from that, I could tell you, and Joanna hopefully remembers this, we literally walked straight out of the trustee meeting, sat down at a table, yourself, myself, and Nelly, etc., and worked through freshly as to how we could bring this conversation directly to this meeting. And so the alignment between the discussions and the trustees with those questions is what is the genesis of what we're doing here with Mark and Marie Carmen and Pam here today. So thank you. Over to you, Mark.
Okay, thank you, Lee. So as Lee said, the genesis of this was from the trustees meeting. The discussion was primarily about digital, but then it morphed into the broader question about who we partner with. And that led to a discussion amongst the trustees about strategic alliances across the organisation. And the trustees were very keen to seek guidance and advice from the Advisory Council on this important topic. In essence, whether we have strategic alliances, with whom, and to what end. So my colleague Marie Carmen and myself will do a brief tee-up, then going to pass across to Pam O'Connell and Pascal Ferrajac, who are going to offer a World Bank perspective on the alliance with the IFRS Foundation from an external party. And then we're going to ask you four questions to go away and discuss during the breakout sessions. You got the slide change on that. Thank you. Great, thank you. So to tee this up, we thought we'd come up first of all with a basic definition of what we mean by a strategic alliance. So there is no single definition, but this seemed to capture it fairly well. An arrangement between two or more organizations to share resources in order to achieve a mutually beneficial outcome. So just to be clear, we're not talking about joint ventures where you would typically have two organizations creating a third. And what we're not talking about here is stakeholder engagement that happens as part of the ISB's normal standard setting work. So just looking back at the history of the organisation, one historic example of a strategic alliance was the 2002 ISB-FASB Norwalk Agreement and subsequent iterations of that. The context to that was that in 2002 we'd seen the Enron and WorldCom accounting scandals, and FASB was in the process of upgrading its own accounting standards in response to those events. At the same time, the ISB had inherited the IAS standards from its predecessor body, and there was a need to upgrade those standards. So both organizations decided to establish a strategic alliance under the auspices of the Norwalk Agreement to share resources in order to achieve a mutually beneficial outcome. So right now, the closest thing we have within the organization to strategic alliances are memorandums of understanding. And what we have here is the list of MOUs that we have cut and pasted from our website. It's primarily international and regional peers. If you look through that list, some of those are more ongoing working arrangements rather than a clear strategic alliance with a clear purpose, but it's a fairly mixed bag. But what it told me looking at this is that there's no clear top-down framework, if you like, for which arrangements that we have. So as Erki and Lee and Joanna mentioned, at the trustees meeting in January, there was this environmental scan looking at the strategic challenges that the organisation faced. That chimed with the comments by Ian McCafferty yesterday in terms of the broader geopolitical and macroeconomic trends. So we thought that would be useful context for thinking about strategic alliances and how strategic alliances can help us respond to some of these big picture themes and issues.
Okay, so now what we can see on this slide are the strategic challenges that Mark has just described, and that what we have tried to do is to map them on an x-axis against the existing MOUs on the y-axis. As you can see, for example, for the relevance trend, it's not surprising that this applies to all existing MOUs, given that a lot of them relate to core standard setting work. And then, for example, on the other hand, we have the technology column. You can see this is largely empty. However, it's important that we note that this doesn't really tell us the complete story, because, for example, with some organizations such as ESMA, we have done some work in the area of taxonomy. But the message we want to convey here is that, like, historically, technology has not been a focus on the MOUs we have just shown. And now, as Mark has just explained, we're going to hear what the benefits of strategic alliances are from an external perspective. So, Pam and Pascal, over to you now.
All right. Thank you, Mari Carmen. And for those of you I haven't had an opportunity to meet yet, my name is Pam O'Connell, and I'm the chief accountant at the World Bank Group. And I'm also joined today by my colleague, Pascal Ferjac, who's a senior officer in our Vienna Center for Financial Reporting Reform. And he's been very pivotal in a number of the initiatives that we've had with the foundation. And I understand that several of you already know him. We're both very grateful to have this opportunity to give you a tiny brief where I might sound rushed because I've been told to stay on point. A little bit about the work that the Foundation and the World Bank have partnered together to do. Now, some of you might be less familiar with the World Bank, so I wanted to share just a few data points for context. The World Bank was formed in 1945 as part of the post-World War II reconstruction of Europe, and France had our first loan in 1947, but we've since grown to 189 member countries around the globe. We have 16,000 employees, and we operate in 130 locations, predominantly providing financial solutions as well as knowledge services to our member countries. Now, on the slide here, yes, it's there, you'll see that our corporate mission is to eradicate extreme poverty and to boost shared prosperity. And thinking about the somber outlook that Ian shared with us about economic growth for the world yesterday, you can imagine this remains a challenging task for us to help our member countries, particularly those in the developing world. So one pathway in our work that we pursue is partnerships with organizations, of course, such as the IFRS Foundation, and many others like the Financial Stability Board. I feel like I'm going to recite alphabet soup here. The PIOB, the FSB, the IIRC, the list goes on. But people who are working in the accounting and auditing world, as well as in financial markets and reporting. So occupying the intersection there with the foundation is our belief that economic development is supported by capital flows to markets. And when you get into cross-border flows, it really highlights the importance of harmonized standards. So one essential piece to the overall puzzle of this is the high-quality reporting in both the private and public sectors, which provides a solid foundation for better transparency and reliable financial information. And I think this morning that Erki's comments really punctuated that quite effectively, that there's a broad remit where this is supporting flows in the world. So more reliable and more comparable financial information is an important underpinning to better investor trust. And of course, it also helps in other objectives such as improved corporate governance, better banking supervision, securities regulation, and even tax administration. And it's because of this strong connection between reporting practices and economic development that we participate in international initiatives that support these good practices. So turning specifically to our MOU, or our strategic alliance with the foundation, we focus in three areas. The first area is supporting implementation of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs, which I know we have a session on later this morning, I think it is, both of which we consider global public goods. And the second area of emphasis is collaborating on capacity development for implementation. And this aligns very closely with the foundation's spoken objective which I remember Hans repeating several sessions ago, which is the consistency of application and how do you really get into the consistency of application from both the foundation's perspective and from ours. And the last area is enhancing engagement in the standard setting process itself, and particularly trying to bring in the emerging markets and developing economies. So with that as the setting, I'm going to turn it over to Pascal, who's going to share a few of the specifics around how we engage with the foundation.
Thank you, Pam. So I think in a few minutes, what I would like to give back to you is experience that I have in operation, leading some work in European and Central Asia countries, where we have been doing exactly what Pam was saying, that is promoting the adoption of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. And I must say, sometimes the IFRS for SMEs over the application of IFRS, because some countries we use just IFRS and think that would be good enough, but without any quality implementation of it. The second aspect of IFRS for SMEs was, and you would see that in the challenge of the developing countries, they have, of course, they're at very different stages. So you have some that are more advanced than others, but some really lack the resources to maintain or upgrade local standard. And IFRS for SMEs has done a fantastic job either in enabling them to adopt directly the standard or to change their, to upgrade their own standard on, based on the example of IFRS for SMEs. We try to help these countries, we partner with them, we ask for bilateral donors' money to build capacity in those countries once they have adopted the standard, to make sure they have a proper implementation of those standards. And we do that at a different level. We train professionals, or we have professional trained through our programs. But we also train regulators that oversee the implementation of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. We had, with the IFRS Foundation, a fantastic, well, I had, because I have been in the bank for the last 12 years, a fantastic cooperation. And that was in not only in providing those technical resources that are really important, but also by having the participation, either of staff or board members, to some event. I think that has probably helped both of us. In the first way, I would say, when you have a board member speaking at an assembly of regulators, they listen more, you know, than if it's somebody of the profession or a senior manager of a Big Four. So I think that has a virtue. What we tried is we tried to use that very sparingly, so you know, only doing that on a regional basis, not in a in-country basis. And I think that has been very good. We tried also some example of a digitalization. At the time, we had, when the actually the IFRS Foundation didn't have a quite developed platform, we had registered IFRS for SME courses from Mike Wells, and that was in the early 2010s, and that we actually put online. It was quite interesting because this was courses that were for the Western Balkans. But just guess what? The most hits were coming from Latin America. So, you know, interesting, this idea of digitization, because you offer something somewhere and actually you actually help other people somewhere else. So now I'd like to give you a few other examples. So we're trying to promote, I think with some success, the adoption and the correct implementation of IFRS around our member countries. And for the last 20 years, a senior member of the World Bank staff and management have participated with the IFRS Foundation in councils in developing the agricultural standard and other instances on the SME group. So we have a long, long term, a long partnership dating back a long time ago. One of the benefits is we try to get the feedback from our partner countries, the one that actually doesn't send comment letters, and try to voice their concerns. And some of the people who are participating in our workshops would tell you, well, actually, there was a few concerns that were interesting to bring back home. We do regional conferences. We do regional conferences, we often try to invite people from the IFRS Foundation. But when we do in-country, just for one central bank or for a supervisor, we actually do it ourselves. We use consultants and myself and a few other colleagues to do that. One of the big initiatives that contributed a lot to the adoption of IFRS and IFRS for SMEs was the ROSC reports. The ROSC is benchmarking the accounting and auditing framework with the standards, which are IFRS and ISIS. We enjoyed with the IFRS Foundation regional cooperation, and I would say mostly in Europe, Central Asia, Africa, and Latin America. But we still have some projects in Asia, which are actually quite large. Last I heard was a project of Nepal, where we try, Nepal is a poor country with little capacity, and we're trying to build a capacity for an effective adoption of IFRS there. And people are really interested and really grateful that we could do that. We also have provided a grant for the corrective implementation of OIDA, which is encompassing 17 African countries, and which mandates for listed companies, IFRS. So I think that's those kind of things that we're doing. And last but not least, because these are really important, I think we had a great cooperation about translation. Translation is an issue because there's countries where English is not that, people don't have that capacity. So they would like to have translation of the standard. They're always behind. It's very difficult. One of the beauty of IFRS for SMEs is this one is quite never behind because you don't need to translate, to keep it up to date. You have to translate just every 4 years. You have to just update it a little bit. So I think that's a great stride in bringing a standard for most companies. Let's not forget that SMEs represented probably 99% point something about the whole number of companies in a specific country. So I tried here to bring a little bit of experience that we had to also express that I'm very grateful, and we're at the bank very grateful for the help that we had from the IFRS Foundation, and to tell that it was really important for us, and it's central. Well, it's one of the tools in our agenda for private sector development. Transparency and accountability are something that is important. It also addresses corruption, and it's one of the ways to address corruption in the public, but also in the private sector. And if you have better transparency, it's just growth is going to go faster. So. I think it's something that we'd like to see more and more. Thank you.
So I think it's fair to say that the World Bank IFRS relationship fits quite well the earlier definition that we set out of a strategic alliance. In terms of shared resources, the IFRS Foundation brings knowledge and expertise of IFRS. The World Bank brings in-country resources and funding arrangements, and between the two of us, the mutual benefit is to help developing and emerging economies to apply IFRS on a globally consistent basis. So that's why we wanted to give you this example. So thank you to Pam and Pascal. Mary Carmen?
Okay, so now just to finish our session, on this slide you can see some questions that we would like to ask you, and these are for you to discuss in the breakout groups. We're aware that the questions as they're on the slide, they're a little wordy, so for the discussions, we've tried to make them a bit clearer. One of the things is we'd like the discussion to focus on questions 2, 3, and 4. So the first question would be, where could the strategic alliances help us to respond to the global trends that we saw on the first part, where Mark described these challenges? Next question, how do we maximize the value of these strategic alliances? Next question would be like when thinking of whether we should enter or not into a strategic alliance, which are the criteria that we should apply. And then we believed also that these three questions, when you're discussing in your groups, should give you the context for a last question, which is what lesson can we learn from you, from your experience, and also think just not of successes, but also think of failures when things didn't go well, and why did this happen? So that's the idea that will really help us when thinking of our strategy. And I think this is all from us, but now Lee and Joanna, if there's anything else from you.
Thank you very much, Mark and Maria, and in particular, Pam and Pascal. I think what you did is brought alive for us practical examples of, you know, one of our enduring memorandum of understanding and strategic alliances that we currently have. You know, I think that the session that we now need to think about and the group needs to think about and around those questions is, where do we go from here? You know, not saying that those MOUs that we currently have are the wrong ones, but maybe we should be looking at and putting into perspective the strategy that, as Lee said, that the, you know, and is in the slides around where the trustees were talking, what we heard about yesterday morning around the global trends, and in particular some of the things about us making sure that we remain relevant, that we need to sell to various people, in inverted commas, the benefits of applying IFRS, and have we got those right relationships, alliances, in terms of doing that. And some of the key things that came out yesterday, and Erki referred to the word trust a number of times, Pascal and Pam referred to the word trust, so that using our standards for trust, so how can we think of what are the right alliances for that trust element, and making sure that we're relevant. We've just talked about technology, so maybe alliances with something to do with technology. So those are the questions up there. I think Mark also made a very salient point coming through that at the moment we don't really have any top-down structure to determine what strategic alliances that we should have. So in thinking about these questions, and as Maria said, probably the focus on the 2, 3, and 4 with an overlay of your organisation's experience. So the key is we really want your experience around this to be brought to the table about where the foundation can head in relation to alliances. So what works in your organisation? You know, if you have something with a technology company, are they not in the slightest bit interested? Or you know, what are the things that are the key criteria that make an alliance actually work in your organisation? But overlaying that and the structure as to what it is that you think the foundation does need. And as Leah said, what we come back with here is going to feed into the next discussion at the trustees meeting around this very topic. So, with that, I will first ask, are there any questions, or are you all comfortable going into your groups as it is? And Giuseppe.
Yes. In all those questions, I don't see the word risk. So, you don't ask us to consider the risk of strategic alliances, or do you?
And I think the answer is yes, because that is part of the, if you like, the criteria and the success factor.
I see, okay.
So I think absolutely cover the risks and the experience that you've had around that there are risks, and one of them absolutely is if you pick a particular group to have an alliance with, is there a risk that if you pick that group, you are, and I'm going to be careful of my English here, but upset other people?
Yeah.
by having that sole relationship, exclusive relationship.
And I think that's actually an important point, because I think the reality, based on my understanding of how some of these have arisen, there's many more people who probably would quite like to have alliances with us than perhaps we can even manage from a management perspective as well. So I think we need to think about how we balance that.
Very good question, and for all of us to think about in this discussion. Any other clarification points or points like that one that you know will make us all think as we move into this? No? Okay. What we suggest we do then is move into our groups. We have until 11:30 and then break for coffee and back here at 11:45. Thank you very much.